This program contains sensitive language and content. Remembering Slavery is made possible by major grants from the National Endowment for the Humanities, dedicated to expanding American understanding of human experience and cultural heritage, and the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, with additional support from the Southern Humanities Media Fund and the Alabama Humanities Foundation.
We were slaves, so we belonged to people.
See, the white folks would have church in the morning, then they'd let the colored people have church at their church in the evening.
During slavery?
During slave time.
I can remember when the Yankees come through.
Well, now, they tell me to a year before the folk know they were free.
They say the old master come and support me. He quit praying and then asked the Lord, have mercy on the old master. Lord, have mercy on the old master. The old master was whooping with a bull whoop.
If I thought that I'd ever be a slave again, I'd take a gun and just end it all right away. Because you're nothing but a dog. You're not a thing but a dog.
Smithsonian Productions, Remembering Slavery. Those who survived tell their stories. Delia Garlick of Montgomery, Alabama, sat on her porch and insisted that she was 100 years old. She had no good words for slavery days. She said, "Them days was hell. I was growed up when the war come and I was a mother before it closed. Babies was snatched from their mother's breasts and sold to speculators. Oh, children who separated from sisters and brothers and never saw each other again. 'Cause they cry. You think they don't cry when they were sold like cattle? I could tell you about it all day, but even then, you couldn't guess the awfulness of it. It's bad to belong to folks that own your soul and body and that can tie you up to a tree with your face to the tree and your arms fast and tight round it. Who take a long curling whip and cut the blood. Have a lick. Oh, trusting. Trusting was the only hope of the poor black critters in them days. Us just prayed for strength to endure it to the end." Delia Garlick was interviewed by an employee of the Federal Writers Project. Beginning in the late 1930s, interviewers collected the memories of thousands of former slaves. In this program, dramatic readings of some of these written interviews are performed by actors James Earl Jones, Louis Gossett Jr., Debbie Allen, Melba Moore, Clifton Davis, John Sawyer, and myself, Tania Stewart. Some of the interviews were actually audio recorded by scholars. You will also hear excerpts from these historical recordings that capture the voices of men and women who remembered slavery. Let former slaves tell you, in their own words, of their lives in bondage and what it was like to to be a slave no more.
My name is Fountain Hughes. I was born in Charlottesville, Virginia. My grandfather belonged to Thomas Jefferson. My grandfather was 115 years old when he died. And now I am 101 years old. That's enough.
You just go ahead and talk away there. You don't mind, do you, Uncle Fountain?
Who did you work for, Uncle Fountain?
Who did I work for?
Yeah.
You mean when I was a slave?
Yeah, when you were a slave, who did you work for?
Well, I belonged to Burners when I was a slave. My mother belonged to Burners. Burners died during the wartime because he was afraid he'd have to go to war. But now, in them days, you could hire a substitute to take your place. Well, he couldn't get a substitute to take his place, so he ran away from home, and he took cold. And when he come back, war was over, but he died. And then, if he had lived, it couldn't have been no good. The Yankees just come along and just broke the mill open, and rolled all the flour out in the river, and broke the store, and sold all the meat out in the street, and sold all the sugar out. And we boys would pick it up and carry it and give it to our old missus and master, young masters, until we come to be. Well, I don't know how to tell you the truth. When I think of it today, I don't know how I'm living.
101-year-old Fountain Hughes had lived through some of the most trying times in American history. So did Mary Barber. She was 81 years old when she was interviewed in Raleigh, North Carolina. Actress, director, choreographer, and producer Miss Debbie Allen interprets the written responses of Mary Barber.
One of the first things that I remember was my pappy waking me up in the middle of the night, dressing me in the dark, all the time telling me to kick, quack, quack. One of the twins hollered some, and Pat put his hand over his mouth to keep it quiet. And after he was dressed, he went outside and peeped around for a minute. Then he came back and got us. And we then sneaked out the house and along the wood path. Pappy toting one of the twins and holding me by the hand, and Mammy carrying the other two. I reckon I will always remember that walk, with the bushes slapping my legs, and the wind seemed to be just sighing in the trees, and the hoot owls and the whippoorwills hollering at each other from the big trees. I was half asleep, but I sure was scared. Ooh, scared. But in a little while, we passed a plum thicket, and there was the mules in the wagon. There was the quilt at the bottom of the wagon, and on this, they lays us youngins, and Pappy and Mammy gets on the board across the front and drives off down that road. Oh, I sure was sleepy. I sure was scared, too. And we rides along. I listens to Pappy and Mammy talk. And Pappy's telling Mammy about the Yankees coming to their plantation, burning the corn cribs and smokehouse and just tearing up, destroying everything. He says right low that they done took Master Jordan down in Norfolk, and that he stole the mules and the wagon and escaped. Ooh, we were scared of them Yankees to start with, but the more we thinks about running away from our masters, the scared we get to them Rebs. Anyhow, Pappy say that we is going to join the Yankees. Well, we about travels all night, and we hid in the woods all day for a long time, but after a while we gets to Dr. Dillard's place in Chauvin County. I reckon we stays there several days, a few days. And the Yankees has took this place, so we stops over and has a heap of fun dancing and such while we was there. Oh, it was nice. And the Yankees tell Pappy to head for New Bern, and he would be took care of there. So To New Bern we goes. Yeah, we goes to New Bern. Mm-hmm.
In July 1864, my master's regiment captured a gang of Yankee soldiers and brought them into camp to keep them until they could be transferred to Libby Prison in Richmond. We were in camp up near Fredericksburg. At that time, the rebels were trying to take Washington.
It was May 28, 1937, when William I. Johnson, Jr. was interviewed. At the time, he was a 97-year-old retired building contractor. Clifton Davis brings the transcript of his interview to life.
I didn't know what the war was all about, nor why they were fighting. But when the rebels were out on the battlefield, a few pickets were left to guard the prisoners, and the servants got a chance to talk to the Yankee prisoners. They explained to us about slavery and freedom. They told us if we got a chance to steal away from camp and got over to the Yankee side, we would be free. They said, if we win, all you colored folk will be free. But if the rebels win, you will always be slaves. These words got into our heads. We got together, five of us, and decided to take the chance one night, and we made it. Of course, the rebel pickets knew we were servants in the camp. They probably thought we were going to run an errand for our masters. We carried along plenty of chewing tobacco, because we knew the pickets would always like a chew, and they didn't ask no question. After we passed the rebel pickets and got out on the road, every time we would hear horses, we would run off the road and into the woods. After the horses would pass, we would come out and continue our travel as fast as possible. We reached Washington the next day, and Yankee pickets took us to the military headquarters. The other men enlisted in the fighting regiments, but I was lucky enough to be sent with another group of men to Boston, Massachusetts, where I was assigned to General Butler's division and to the quartermaster's corps in charge of food and rations. Down here below Richmond, at a place now called Seven Pines, Negro troops fought one of the fiercest battles of the war against the rebels. The battle lasted 7 days. Many men were killed on both sides, and when the battle was over, only 7 pine trees were left standing on the edge of the road, where previously there had been a great pine forest. After this battle, the place became known as Seven Pines.
Fremont told them when the war had first begun how to save the Union the way it should be won. But old Kentucky swore so hard and Abe had his fears till every hope was lost but the colored volunteers. McClellan went to Richmond with 200,000 brave. He said, keep back the niggers, the Union I will save. Little Mac, he had his way, the Union's still in tears. Now they call for the help of the colored volunteers. Oh, give us a flag, oh, free without a slave. We'll fight to defend it, but our fathers did so brave. The Gallant Company A will make those rebels dance. stand by the Union. We only had a chance. We'll stand by the Union. We only had our chance.
The first cannon I heard scared me near about to death. We could hear him going, boom, boom. Well, I thought it was thunder. Then Miss Polly said, listen, Sarah, you hear them cannons? Why, they killing our men. And she begun to cry.
Sarah DeBrow was born somewhere back in the 1850s in Orange County, North Carolina. She was a young girl when the world changed. Melba Moore presents her words.
Well, I run in the kitchen where Aunt Chatty was cooking and told her Miss Polly was crying. She said, they ain't crying cause the Yankees killing them men's. She crying all that cause she scared we gonna be set free. Well, then I got mad and told her Miss Polly wasn't like that. Well, I remember when Wheeler's cavalry come through here. They was Federals, but they was mean as the Yankees. They stole everything they could find and they killed a pile of niggas. They come around checking everything and asking the niggas if they wanted to be free. And what if they said yes, then they shot them down. What if they said no? Well, then they let them alone. They took three of my uncles out in the woods and shot their faces off. When the war was over, well, the Yankees was all around the place, just telling the niggas just what to do. Told them that they was free and they didn't have to slave for the white folks no more. Well, my folks all left Moss Cane and went on up to live in houses that the Yankees built. Well, it was like poor white folks' houses, little shacks made out of sticks and mud, sticky mud chimneys. They weren't like Moss Cane cabins planked up and warm. They were full of cracks and there wasn't no lamps and no oil. And all the light come from the light wooden knots burning in the fireplace. Well, one day, see now, my mammy come to the big house after me. Well, I didn't want to go. I want to stay with Miss Polly. I begun to cry. Mammy caught a hold of me. Well, I grabbed Miss Polly and I held her so tight, I tore a skirt binder loose and her skirt come falling down round about her feet. And Miss Polly said, let her stay with me, Mammy. But Mammy shook her head. You took her away from me and didn't pay no mind to my crime. So now, I was taking her back home. We's free now, Miss Polly. And we ain't gonna be slaves no more to nobody. And she dragged me away. I can see how Miss Polly look right now today. She ain't said nothing, but she looked hard at Mammy, and her face was white.
Louis Gossett Jr. reads the words of Tom Hester, a freeborn who was bound out to a plantation owner. While looking after horses and wounded men for the Confederate Army, he was captured by the Yankees and began to work for the Union Army. He said that he saw Grant and Lee meet under an apple tree when Lee surrendered.
General Lee tipped his hat first, and then General Grant tipped him. General Lee got off on his horse, and General Grant got off his. General Lee got on a new uniform with gold braid and lots of buttons, but General Grant got on an old blue coat that's so dirty it looked black. They stood there talking about half hour, and then they shake hands, and us what was watching know that Lee done give up. Then General Lee got on his horse, and General Grant got on his'n, and General Lee tipped his hat, and General Grant tipped his'n, and General Lee rode over to the rebel side, and General Grant rode over to our side, and the war was over. The next day, I went out there to cut a branch off that tree, but there wasn't no sign of it, just a hole in the ground. The soldiers done cut that apple tree down and taken it for souvenirs. Yes, sir, every last piece of it, even the roots.
On April 9, 1865, Confederate General Robert E. Lee surrendered to the Union Army. In December of that year, the 13th Amendment was ratified. It said that slavery shall not exist in the United States. But change is uncomfortable for most people, even when the change is for the better. Transitions will always present new challenges. Esther Rolle portrays Eva Strayhorn.
Well, you see, all the colored people in the country, men, women, and children, except Mother and her children, and the two little children that Hannah left in her care, had gone with the soldiers to the North where they would be set free. Mother wouldn't leave, for she told the soldiers, "My Henry is in the South, and I'll never see him again if I leave the old home place, for he won't know where to find me." The officer told her that he was coming back the next day after us, and for her to be ready to go. Mother told Miss Tessie that she was going to town and take the oath of peace, and they couldn't make her leave. Old Miss told her to go on. So that night, she hitched up the oxen and took her children and set out to Dover, Arkansas, 12 miles away, to see the Bureau man and take the oath. The oath of peace was that you would obey the law and wouldn't harbor no rebel soldiers nor no bushwhackers or do nothing that was wrong or would hinder the cause of the North. When we got back home, we didn't have no home. The very night we left, the bushwhackers, or toe burners as they was called, come to our house and told Miss Tessie that they wanted her money. She told them she didn't have any, but they didn't believe her and told her that they would burn her if she didn't give her money. She kept telling them that she didn't have any money, and they took everything they wanted and then jerked the curtains off the windows and piled them up in the middle of the room and the furniture on top of them and set them afire and burned everything except the niggers' quarters. It was a pity to burn that big, pretty two-story house, but they done it. Mother and us children went to live on the side of the mountain in a little cabin by ourselves, and Miss Tessie went to live with Miss Liza, her daughter. Mother had to keep her oath, and she was afraid if she went with Miss Tessie that Master Robert might come home and they would say she had broke her oath and make her leave. One night, Mother was spinning and I was carding, and everything was just as quiet as we heard somebody tap on the door. We said real quiet, and then we heard it again. You dare not speak above a whisper. So Mother went to the door and said real low, "Who's there?" "It's your old master, Bill Newton." Mother forgot and said loud, "Is that really you, Master Bill? And how did you know where I was?" She opened the door, and sure enough, it was Master Bill. He had come back to see how we was all getting along and found his house burnt. Somebody told him his wife was at Miss Liza's, so he went there, and she told him where we was. He told Mother that he wanted to go to his brother Nazar's and wait for him there, and he would take us to where Father was. She hitched up the oxen and we went down to Uncle Nazar's, and one night old Massa and Miss Tessie slipped in there and got us and took us to Texas. We found Father and we was all happy again.
You told me about during the big breakup, the soldiers came by and riding horseback. Mm-hmm. And you all were sitting on the fence, you children. Can you remember that?
Of course I can. I sat on the fence at the time. Me, Cousin Lulu, and Cousin Sally, and all of us. Our yard had white picket fence around. The road went right along by our house like the road goes along by my house.
The voice of Harriet Smith.
He said, oh, I stood on that picket fence all day long, seeing them soldiers going back to Silent Home, different places. Colored soldiers.
Colored soldiers.
Poor colored soldiers in Joe.
Well, what about this girl you told me about that one?
Well, Nat Porter was the one that long Miss Porter, one of our white folks' neighbors.
Well, I thought she went off with the soldiers.
She did. She went off with the soldiers. Soldiers come along. We all sitting on the fence, and I stand at the fence sitting, and a colored soldier come along and asked her, did she want to go with him? And she said, yes, she might have run them horses.
Up and behind him, huh?
No, hold the horse to herself.
Is that
he
right?
He could ride horses. He would jump on them horses, straddle sometime, ride sometime. We learned how to ride. I could stand flat-footed on the ground and jump on the horse side of you.
Is that
right? Yes.
Yeah. Well, you were
right. Yes, all of us was raised to ride horses. Mm. Paul had horses of his own, chickens of his own.
Well, then what happened to Mac Porter after she and this soldier?
She went on with them. I never did see her and hit that over no more.
Mm.
She was going towards Santa.
Going towards Santa?
Yes, she was on with them.
Well, why didn't she didn't even go tell her mama she was going or anything?
She didn't have any mother.
Oh, I see. And his daughter, she'd already been freed, had she?
Yeah. That was the time the soldiers was going back, you know, after the freedom.
Mm-hmm.
Well, she'd always come over to our house and stay with us.
We all go out every day, back in town, to see the Yankees all going back home.
Billy McCrae was recorded in Jasper, Texas in 1940.
I can really disagree that this how 6 and 8 mules took count going through, and boats on them, count, then they put the wagon, and have boats all on them wagon. Welcome to the mules, and one man riding a tow mule, we all just take a look at. I'm saying, all day long I'll be caught, and I read as well, and all the Yankees I read like were dressed in blue clothes. I can remember, with blue jump right here, and had a little pillow on the coat right there, back on, and courses up here. I read like this as well, this is coming out, and it, black news, I don't know how many black horses. Then they come along in with a lot of these old gray mules on it. Hitch to them camera. And then they come back with horses, saw horses. All hitch up, all going through town. That way for 2 days, they were going out through town for 2 days. And I remember, and the Yankees stopped here. And the Yankees stopped right on the corner of Square. I was good size boys then. And they what they call Freedom Bureau, if you tell that anything. And they prosecuting people, you know, what to do, you know, and all like that. And I reject hardly the problem. I've seen 2 men they had that were punishing for what to do. And I've seen them take them. I had a little big tent. We boys go around and see them. And they take them, hang them up with a slum. And they let that family hang out so many men and then let him down. That's the punishment they got. And the Yankees would come, and after a while, there'd be a whole troop of men come. They said they were Yankees. All walking.
All walking.
That crew of Yankees will go soon. Next time you see, they come a whole troop of Yankees. All riding horses. Big guns hanging on them. All that stuff, you know. That. You all stand looking at them. All going home. And I asked Marshal, Mama, where they going? She said, they're all going home now. And old Colonel Craig, that old Martha, he was looking at. He said, well, hi, all of you niggas is all free now. Yankees all going home. I remember that dish as well.
Alice Gaston, born 1853, was on a plantation in Alabama when she was recorded.
I can remember when the Yankees come through, and they carried my father, we carried me, my two sisters and one brother. And they left me, and I can remember when my mistress used to run in the garden, find the Yankees and tell us if they come, don't tell them where they're at. So don't tell nobody where they're at when they come. And they all come and told me, don't get scared now and tell them where they is. I told them no, we told them no. And when they come and ask for them, I told them I didn't know where they were, and they was in the woods, and left us at the house. And when my father left, he carried two girls and one son, the oldest one, carried them with him, and with the Yankees. And I can remember that.
You're listening to Remembering Slavery from Smithsonian Productions.